you would, take your Bibles and turn to the 22nd chapter of the book of Numbers. 22nd chapter of the book of Numbers. Remember, if you will, we talked about on Sunday morning the section of Numbers that we're studying. We have moved the children of Israel all the way from Mount Sinai across the wilderness area, and we're basically about to place them, if you see Jericho on your map in green, right across from Jericho is the section of area that we're talking about moving them into. And for the next few chapters, we're going to be dealing with a conversation between Balaam, God, and the king of Moab, as they join hand with the Midianites to try to stop the children of Israel from moving into their area and overthrowing them as the king. Now remember, if you will, we made the statement that if the king of Moab, as well as Balaam himself, had known the word of God, they would have not really been worrying about this. Does anybody remember why that they did not need to be worried about the children of Israel?
God promised it to
the Moabites. Yes, the Moabites.
Right.
God promised that they would not interfere with those particular people, because they were descendants of Lot. And it was the general location of where Laban and his descendants had lived at one time. But yet they were really upset over the children of Israel, because they feared those 600,000 fighting men. And they told the Midianite king, says, they're just like oxen. They're gobbling up the grass everywhere they go. So they go and hire a soothsayer by the name of Balaam. And they are expecting Balaam to curse Israel so that they will not be successful in their passing through the land of Moab, and of course overthrowing the kingdom of Moab, as well as the Midianites were more a nomad race anyway. They kind of moved from place to place. So that's what is about to take place as we begin chapter 22, as we begin to look at this conversation that's going to go on for several chapters. Now remember, if you will, it says in verse 1 that they had pitched in the plains of Moab, on this side of Jordan, by Jericho. And Balak, the son of Zipporah, saw all that Israel had done to the Amorites, and Moab was sore afraid of the people, because they were many, and they were distressed because of the children of Israel. And then, of course, verse 4 is where it talks about Moab and Midian going in together. And verse 5 talks about sending messengers to Balaam to curse the Israelites. And as we said on Sunday morning in verse 18, that had Balaam stuck with what he said in verse 18, not only would his safety have been secured, but in reality, we made the statement that if anyone would follow these words spoken by Balaam, that it would basically bring to an end the religious confusion and religious division in the world today, as it would have back then had they heeded these words Notice what it said. Balaam answered and said, if Balak would give me his house full of silver and gold, I cannot go beyond the word of the Lord my God to do less or more. So you notice, if you will, Balaam really started out with the right attitude. Has anybody read further enough along to know the end of how this turns out for Balaam?
Not good.
That's right. I won't go into that tonight, but certainly we'll try to get there by Sunday morning. So you might ought to be reading ahead enough to see if you can kind of figure out the outcome of this. Now notice, if you will, the conversation starts with a real strong stance. Notice in verse 22, God's anger was kindled because he went, and the angel of the Lord stood in the way for an adversary against him. Now he was riding upon his ass, and his two servants were with him, and the ass saw the angel of the Lord standing by the way, and his sword drawn in his hand, and the ass turned aside out of the way and went to a field, and Balaam smote the ass to turn her in the way. You know, you wonder why this conversation is going on between Balaam and God. But God is basically using Balaam. He's talking to Balaam through Balaam. Though we don't know exactly who Balaam is and why, other than Joshua says he was a soothsayer and evidently had gained the popularity among the kings around there that he was quite successful at what he did. Why they thought that he could convene with God, but God's convening with him, talking back and forth to him. But I guess if you can use a mule, you know, to work with and talk through, then you can certainly use someone like Balaam. So now notice, if you will, Balaam is on his way. And this conversation is going to go on, and it's going to be somewhat similar. It's almost like Moab. The king of Moab is just kind of testing Balaam. And he'll say, Balaam, if you'll do this, we'll give you this. And of course, Balaam's going to come back each time and says, I can't do that because God will not curse the people. And he's just going to continually come back about 3 or 4 times. And I don't know whether when you read it, it stood out or not, but to me, it was kind of like the temptation of Satan with Jesus out in the wilderness. Remember when Satan tempted Jesus? He made 2 or 3 attempts. Well, I'll give you this, I'll give you this, I'll give you this. Well, that's kind of the approach here that the king of Moab kind of took with Balaam. You know, if you'll just curse those people, I'll give you this. And Balaam withstood. Let's watch as we go on a little bit further. It really gets into it in chapter 23. Notice, if you will, it says in verse 1, Balaam said unto Balak, build me here 7 altars and prepare me here 7 oxen and 7 rams. And Balak did as Balaam had spoken, and Balaam offered on every altar a bullock and a ram. Does this sound like anything we've looked at before? They're actually offering sacrifices. And Balaam is telling the king of Moab, okay, why don't you bring me some oxen? Why don't you bring me some cattle? And we'll make a sacrifice and we'll just see what God says to me. So he's kind of acting as a mediator between Balak, the king, and God. And he's kind of serving as a priest instead for the king here. Now notice as it goes on. Verse 4. God met Balaam, and he said unto him, I have prepared 7 altars, and I have offered upon every altar a bullock and a ram. And the Lord put a word in Balaam's mouth and said, Return unto Balak, and thus shalt thou speak. And he returned unto him, and lo, he stood by his burnt sacrifice, he and all the princes of Moab. And he took up his parable and said, Balak, the king of Moab, hath brought me from Amram out of the mountains of the east, saying, Come curse me Jacob, and come defy Israel. How shall I curse whom God hath not cursed? Or how, shall I defy whom the Lord hath not defiled? For from the top of the rocks I see him, and from the hills I behold him. Lo, the people shall dwell alone, and shall not be reckoned among the nation. Who can count the dust of Jacob, and number the fourth part of Israel? Let me die the death of the righteous, let my last end be like this. And Balak said unto Balaam, What hast thou done unto me? I took thee to curse mine enemies, and behold, thou hast blessed them altogether. So notice, if you will, the king of Moab is not too happy with the results that he's getting. You see, he's sure that Balaam will curse the Israelites and get the needed response that he wants. He wants them to fail. And Balaam is basically saying, how can I curse somebody that God has blessed? How can I stop something that God has started? Now notice how it shifts to another location and another time. Verse 14. He brought him into the field of Zophim, to the top of Pisgah, and built 7 altars, offered a bullock and a ram on every altar. And he said unto Balak, Stand here by the burnt offerings while I meet the Lord yonder. And the Lord met Balak, put a word in his mouth, and said, Go again to Balak and say thus. When he came to him, behold, he stood by his burnt offerings, the princes of Moab with him. And Balak said unto him, What hath the Lord spoken? And he took up his parable and said, Rise up, Balak, and hear. Hearken unto me. God is not a man that he should lie, neither the son of man that he should repent. Hath he said, and shall he not do it? Or hath he spoken, and shall he not make it good? Behold, I have received a commandment to bless, and he hath blessed, and I cannot reverse it. You see what he's saying? He's looking the king of Moab in the face, and he's saying, Look, Again, you're wanting me to do something that I cannot do. God is not a man like you and I. He's committed himself to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. He's committed himself to these people, and he's not going to change his mind. I can't reverse what he said. Now notice how it goes. He hath not beheld iniquity in Jacob, neither hath he perseverance in Israel. The Lord his God is with him, and the shout of a king is among them. God brought him out of Egypt. He hath, as it were, the strength of a unicorn. Surely there's an enchantment against Jacob. Neither is there any divination against Israel. Notice in verse 24 it says, the people shall rise up as a great lion and lift up himself as a young lion. He shall not lie down until he eat the prey and drink the blood of the slain. Now you see, it's getting worse. Look what it says in verse 25. And Balak said unto Balaam, neither curse them at all, nor bless them at all. But Balaam answered and said unto Balak, told not I thee, saying, all the Lord speaketh that I must do. And Balak said unto Balaam, come, I pray thee, I'll bring thee to another place. See how he's just steady, moving him from one location to the other, making him another proposition, one after another.
Trying every way in the world to impress God.
It's not working. And the Lord met Balaam. Verse 27, and Balak said unto Balaam, come, I pray thee, I bring thee to another place. Peradventure, it will please God that thou mayest curse me them that from thence. And Balak brought Balaam unto the top of Mount Peor, that looketh toward Jeshurun. And Balaam said unto Balak, build me here 7 altars, prepare me here 7 bullocks and 7 rams. And Balak did, as Balaam saw that it pleased the Lord to bless Israel. He went not, as at other times, to seek for enchantments, but he set his face toward the wilderness. And Balaam lifted up his eyes, and he saw Israel abiding in his tents, according to their tribes, and the Spirit of God came upon him. And he took up his parable and said to Balaam the son of Beor, the man whose eyes are open has said. He has said, which heard the word of God, which saw the vision of the Almighty falling into a trance, but having his eyes open, how goodly are thy tents, O Jacob, and thy tabernacles, O Israel. As the valleys are they spread forth as gardens by the riverside, as the tree of a lion allures, which the Lord hath planted, and the cedar trees beside the water. He'll pour the water out of his bucket, and his seed shall be in many waters, and his king shall be higher than Agag, and his kingdom shall be exalted. So notice again, he's hearing not what he wants to hear, but yet a little bit more information each time about Jehovah God. And now he's saying that Jehovah God's people, their kingdom is going to be exalted. It's going to be higher. Their king is going to be mightier than any of these kings around Moab and other places. Why is he going to be higher and mightier? Who do you think he's referring to?
Christ.
Absolutely. He's pointing toward Christ and the establishment of God's kingdom. Now look at verse 10. Balak's anger was kindled against Balaam. And he smote his hands together, and Balak said unto Balaam, I call thee to curse my enemies, and behold, thou hast blessed them three times. Therefore now flee thou to thy place. I thought to promote thee into great honor, but lo, the Lord hath kept thee back from honor. In other words, he's saying, I'm trying to help you, man. I'm trying to make you rich. I'm trying to give you gold and silver and prestige, and you just don't want to take my money. Now just get on. Look what it says. Balaam said unto Balak, Spake I not also to thy messengers, which thou sendest unto me, saying, If Balak would give me his house full of silver and gold, I cannot go beyond the commandment of the Lord to do either good or bad of mine own mind. But what the Lord saith, that will I speak. And now, behold, I go unto my people. Come, therefore, and I will advertise thee what this people shall do to thy people in the latter days. And he took up his parable and said, Balaam the son of Beor hath said, and the man whose eyes are open hath said, He has said which heard the words of God and knew the knowledge of the Most High, which saw the vision of the Almighty falling into a trance, but having his eyes open. I'll see him, but not now. I'll behold him, not now. There shall come a star out of Jacob, and a scepter shall rise out of Israel, and shall smite the corners of Moab, and shall destroy all the children of Seth, and Edom shall be a possession of Seir. Also shall a possession for his enemies, and Israel shall do valiantly. Now if you want to make you a note right here, under this verse, write down 2 Samuel chapter 8, verses 2 through 14. Now, when we get to that section in our study of the Old Testament, the children of Israel would have gone through the judges, had chosen them kings as opposed to judges, and the second king, David, was reigning, and David would overthrow these very people and take them into captivity. So what we have here in this section is a prophecy for the future to let the king know it's coming, but not now. Here's what's going to happen. Verse 20 it says, And he looked on Amalekite, and he looked on Amalek, and he took up his parable and said, Amalek was the first of the nations, but his later end shall be that he perish forever. And he looked on the Kenites and took up this parable and said, Strong is thy dwelling place, and thou puttest thy nest in a rock. Nevertheless, the Kenites shall be wasted until Asher shall carry thee away captive. And he took his parable and said, Alas, who shall live when God doeth this? And the ship shall come from the coast of Chittim, and shall affect Asher, and shall affect Ebor, and he shall perish forever. And Balaam rose up and went and returned to this place. And Balak also went his way. Now, notice if you will, it says, Balaam rose up and went and returned to his place. And that may be exactly what Balaam said he was going to do. But if we continue to read, we know that isn't exactly what happened. It seems to be the case that Balaam took up among the Midianites. And notice, if you will, in chapter 25, it says, Israel abode in Shittim, and the people began to commit whoredom with the daughters of Moab. And they called the people unto the sacrifices of their gods. And the people did eat and bowed down to their gods. And Israel joined himself unto Baal Peor, and the anger of the Lord was kindled against Israel. And the Lord said unto Moses, take all the heads of the people and hang them up before the Lord against the sun, that the fierce anger of the Lord may be turned away from Israel. And Moses said unto the judges of Israel, slay ye every one of his men that will join to Baal Peor. Now look a little bit farther. Verse 6. One of the children of Israel came and brought his unto his brethren a Midianite woman in the sight of Moses and in the sight of all the congregation of the children of Israel who were weeping before the door of the tabernacle. You see, he wasn't satisfied to go over to Midian and go over to Moab. He brings him one back with him in front of all the people of Israel. Now notice it, verse 7. When Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the son of Aaron. Now, where's Aaron now? Aaron's dead. Remember, we read about that a few chapters earlier, where they went up on the mountain, took the garments off of Aaron and give it to Eleazar. Well, now Phinehas, his son, is the priest. He rose up from among the congregation, took a javelin in his hand, went after the man of Israel into the tent, and thrust both of them through, the man of Israel and the woman through her belly. So the plague was stayed from the children of Israel. No, this is actually talking about the men of Israel that had done this deed. And there was a plague that God placed upon them. And when he took that spear and went into this Israelite man's camp and run that spear through him and the woman that he had in his tent, it stayed the plague. And by that time, notice, if you will, it tells you how many had been killed. 24,000. So, you know, notice, if you will, since we've left Mount Sinai, at every little stop, and every time these plagues hit, we talked about them all dying in the wilderness, but a lot of them died because of these plagues. You know, when you go to dropping them 25,000 in a whack, you can thin through 600,000 men pretty quick. So notice what's going on now. The plague stopped. 24,000 of them are dead. And if you'll notice, it says, verse 11, Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the son of Aaron the priest, hath turned my wrath away from the children of Israel. Verse 12. Behold, I give unto him my covenant of peace. You'll have it, and his seed after him, even the covenant of an everlasting priesthood, because he was zealous with his God. So notice, if you will, in reality, he's saying, God's saying, okay, because of this deed, I'm going to make a covenant with this priesthood. It's going to last as long as the law of Moses lasts. Aaron's priesthood is going to stay intact. And then notice, as you close this out, it's going to point out that these this man that the spear was stabbed through the spear, he was one of the prominent men of his tribe. He was one of the heads of the tribe. And she was one of the princes of the Midianites, or was it Moab? Midianites. So these were two very prominent people that you're talking about, that this spear was run through them. Now, what we're going to get into, I'm not going to get into these next few chapters, because beginning in chapter 26, and you go all the way through chapter 26, and they're just going to start the process of renumbering all of these people the second time. And you're going to learn that it's a completely different people than what Moses and Aaron numbered when they left Sinai. Why? Because they're all dead except for Joshua and Caleb. And they're going to start renumbering those. Then in chapter 27, you will notice where the daughters of Zelophehad, the son of Hepher, the son of Gilead, the son of Machar, the son of Manasseh. In other words, some of Joseph's children's descendants had lost their husbands, their fathers, back in the wilderness. And they died. They may have died from a natural cause, but they died, and there was not any kinspeople. And they're asking for an inheritance when they get to the land of Canaan, based on their fathers, because there's no brothers to take care of the daughters. And in reality, the decision is going to be made: you can have the inheritance of your father if you marry someone from your own tribe. So if they married in the tribe of Manasseh, then they could inherit their dad's spot in Canaan. And then it goes on in 28 and 29 and goes on telling them what to do and how to divide the land and how to divide the all the property as they go into Canaan. Then in chapter 31, we learn about Obed. The Lord spake unto Moses, saying, avenge the children of Israel of the Midianites, afterwards shalt thou be gathered unto thy people. So God tells them, okay, you get you an army, you put you an army together, and you go destroy those Midianites, every one of them. They go to battle against them, and they bring back the women and the children and the gold, the silver, and they burnt their cities and everything else. And they kill the men, just like they said. And if you look in verse 8, who happened to be among these men? They killed all the kings, the five kings of Midian. And who?
Balaam.
Balaam. Balaam, the son of Beor, they slew with the sword. So that ends it in verse 31 for Balaam. He dies with the men of the Midianites. Now they get back and they have a little problem they've got to deal with, because Moses wants to know about the women. Why'd you bring the women back? So they come up with another decision. All the women that had been married, or the women that might have had some association with the men of Israel, Just kill them right quick. And you can let the daughters live, and you can keep them for your possession along with the gold, the silver, and whatever else you took. So that kind of takes the Midianites out of the picture. And we'll pick up here on Sunday morning and be reading the book of Deuteronomy. Because we're getting close to approaching Moses' death. Remember, Moses is going to die. Then Joshua is going to take over leadership. So we're going to go through the book of Deuteronomy, start Joshua, get the children of Israel